Come here.
What are you looking at? Lacey, Willie, I told you not to spy on us.
The night still haunts me and there must be a reason. I'm afraid something's going to happen. Dear Lacey and Willie, a long time has passed, more than 20 years since I last saw you. As your mother, I feel I have the right to see you at least one more time.
Willie.
Let's get rid of these ghosts once and for all.
You know, I remember that Grandma said when you break a mirror, you free everything that it seems.
Boogeyman!
Shut up, Timmy.
Boogeyman!
Andy?
This long.
He's here, Jake. I know he's here. When I broke the mirror, I released him.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it does. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 129. And this time we're going beyond the mirror with the Boogeyman, the original, well, I say original, advisedly, but the not very original, perhaps a little bit original, Boogeyman from 1980. Do you get scared when you look in the mirror, Eric?
Ha 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 ha. Only if there's a picture of you hanging in the background.
Oh, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, that was clever, wasn't it?
Yeah, but not really. But anyway, thank you. Thank you, Eric. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah?
Good.
Good, 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 good. Well, that's good. We are, as usual, battling a few technical issues here, but hopefully things will... If I don't move an inch, then hopefully everything will stop collapsing around me. So, but without further ado, Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, actually. Just in the first throes of autumn, aren't we? Which is why maybe watching the Boogeyman...
I was about to say you're in the first throes of your hangover.
No, I haven't got a hangover today, actually. No,
the weather's still very hot here. I'm just waiting on the cooler weather.
Right, okay. Well, there's definitely a little chill in the air here. So we're starting to get towards scented candles, pumpkins, and open fires, and a tot of whiskey, perhaps. Who knows?
I do have pumpkin spice, like air freshener going. It's like those little wax cubes. So it smells good in here.
See, I keep
candles, you mean?
It's like wax cubes, and it's on like this little burner that you plug up.
All right.
It burns the wax, but it smells like autumn in here, so that's good. Mm.
Eric's got something he plugs up, but we won't talk about that.
And it smells nice too.
Well, we don't get pumpkin spice here. Do you get pumpkin spice in Dublin, Eric?
Not really. No, I think in trendy cafes you can get pumpkin spice lattes or something, but I don't drink coffee because I'm not that sophisticated.
Okay. Right. Well... Nathan, how about you? Are you a pumpkin spice fan?
Not really. I mean, I don't mind it, but I'm not crazy about it.
Okay, but will you be crazy about this movie?
Perhaps. Time will tell.
Time will tell.
I'm just kind of curious why Eric has pictures of Justin hanging up in his bathroom.
Well, so am I.
You said you get scared if you see Justin's picture in your mirror.
Well, I think he just says Justin. Justin's name five times like Candyman, and Justin appears behind him breathing.
See, I keep all my Justin portraits in the living room.
Well, exactly. Oh. Yeah.
So
I have custom Justin toilet paper.
Yeah.
Cha-ching.
Well, they don't.
You
call,
burn, girl.
Oh, they don't call Eric Bloody Mary with the emphasis on the Mary for nothing.
Hey,
good one.
Yeah,
that was really clever, Justin.
Thank you.
Oh, you should be an author.
I am. Yourself. Anyway, so
it begins.
Yeah. And we haven't recorded for a little while, have we? So I think we've got quite a long one coming. So without further ado, let's chat about what we've been watching in those kind of the long days that we haven't talked about. So Eric, how about you? Do you want to kick off?
Okay, well, because I've been on my summer holidays in 35 to 40 degrees Celsius heat with my spectacular tan, I haven't been watching any horror movies, except I went to see Aliens on the big screen, a retro retrospective screening for the 30th anniversary on Friday night. What made this slightly different was that it was had the score done live by the RTE Concert Orchestra. So basically they show the film with the music stripped out of it. It's just dialogue and effects, and then the concert orchestra play in sync to it. And it was quite spectacular, I have to say. It was the theatrical cut of the movie, which, because I'm so used to watching the director's cut for the last 25 years since it was released, it felt kind of like watching a truncated version of the film at times, because I haven't watched the theatrical version for so long. And the weird thing was, and I can understand why they did it, but I wasn't expecting it, was they showed the film with English subtitles, because I think at certain points the orchestra would drown out sort of low-level dialogue. I mean, most notably when Newt says her poorly delivered line. I still think she's the weakest link in the film. She's an appalling actress. She says, "They mostly come at night, mostly." That was drowned out by the orchestra. But I saw on social media loads of people were moaning about the fact that the English subtitles were switched on because they found it too distracting. But it didn't bother me, to be honest. If there was any criticism of the screening, it was that the screen's quite high to accommodate the orchestra. The screen's quite high up, so you're sort of looking up at the screen rather than having it at eye level. But that's just a minor complaint. And also there was a bit of light pollution because obviously the orchestra have to have lights so they can see the score. But apart from that, it was pretty darn good and great to see Aliens on the big screen because I was too young to see it first time around.
Okay, well, no, it sounds good because I remember I saw Aliens at that planetarium last year.
Oh, yeah, before, yeah.
So it's good to see it on the big screen.
Mm. You didn't see it the first time, did you?
I'm trying to remember, actually. I can't remember if I saw Aliens on the big screen. I was too young to see Alien, but Aliens...
Eric, that was 30 years ago, not 25.
No, but sorry. I know, I'm talking about the director's cut came out in about 1992.
Oh, okay. Mm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I may have seen Aliens. When did it come out? It's 86.
Yeah, it's 86. I remember my dad took me to see the movie, but that's I don't really actually remember going to see it, but apparently he did.
Mm. I would have been about 17, so I imagine it was an X when it came out, wasn't it? Or an 18, so maybe I didn't. But no, it sounds like fun. So thank you, Eric. So nothing else?
No, that was it. I was too busy tanning my fanny.
Oh, gosh. So you had a nice holiday?
I did.
Okay.
Very sunny. Very warm.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, how about
lots of mojitos.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I had lots of mojitos.
We've moved on. Thank you. Joseph.
I'm not finished.
Oh, sorry. You are finished on this podcast.
I was possessed by Nathan there.
Right, well, we'll move on. Joseph, how about you? What have you been watching in the last couple of weeks?
Yes, I've watched quite a lot. On your recommendation, I gave in and watched the second season of The Scream Show. And I think you were right. Like, the first five or six episodes, it meanders a lot. I mean, this is a slasher show, but it has this very bad habit of, like, going three or four episodes without a murder. And that really bugs me. After about the midway point, it starts getting really good. The chase scenes are really good, and some of the deaths are really violent when they actually get to them. I think my one failing with it was that I was able to kind of pinpoint who the murderer was, fairly early on, so there wasn't much suspense. But I wouldn't say it's a great show, but it's like it's inching ever closer to being a good show. Like, maybe by the next season, it'll be, a little more watchable than what it is.
Well, you know, there's a Halloween special coming up.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's a Halloween special, which is like a two-hour special, or I don't know if it's over just 1 week or it's a couple of episodes. But I think it's up in the air whether or not there'll be season three anyway, so this might tie it all up.
Hmm, interesting. Hmm.
But I take it, Nathan, you didn't watch it in the end, did you?
I haven't finished it, but I started the first season.
Okay. Well, we'll wait to hear what you thought when you've got through that. But and I know, Eric, you haven't watched it either, have you?
No, I don't think I have any intention of watching it, I'm afraid. Sorry.
I know you haven't.
I am interested in looking at the new Exorcist TV series, though.
Yeah, I heard that's got some quite interesting, especially some interesting twists and stuff. So, yeah, maybe check that out.
And
I
Eric...
I just want sweary girls vomiting.
Well, we can have a
Eric, look. Ash vs. Evil Dead is a week from today, so...
Yay. I hope it show. I hope it's on the TV station I can get in Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it remains to be seen. But, Joseph, anything else?
Yes, I saw the new Blair Witch film, which I'm a big fan of the original Blair Witch. I know it gets a lot of detractors because, you know, people blame it for being too shaky and they just wander around until someone stands in a corner. But I'd say this one's even worse. It's basically the exact same film, only it's louder. It's a little more obnoxious, and I guess it's a little more, you know, technically high end with the new types of cameras like drones and GoPros and all that stuff. And I don't know, I just found it to be the exact same movie. I just felt like I was watching the movie, you know, remade almost. I didn't really enjoy much of it. I do like there were a few kind of that's kind of interesting how they got that shot, or I guess you could kind of call that creepy if you haven't seen it a million times, but I don't know, I just you know, been there, done that.
Yeah, I saw it. What about you, Nathan and Eric? Have you seen Blair Witch yet?
No, I haven't. Is it as shaky cam tacular as the first one?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, well then, the first one did make me ill. I was one of those poor, unfortunate people who did get motion sickness from the first one. So, I mean, I might skip this one. Hmm.
I also think it might be a case of being too little, too late. I mean, if you're going to follow up the Blair Witch, you know, not counting Book of Shadows, it's probably best to do it around the time of Book of Shadows. But, you know, 16, 17 years later, that kind of shop-worn found footage thing is just kind of on the way out. I think they just waited too long, honestly, if I'm, you know.
What about you, Nathan? Do you watch that or any interest in watching it?
No, I don't think I really have any interest in watching it unless maybe it ends up on Netflix. Then I'd probably watch it.
I'm sure it will do.
I do have an interest in watching it because I do like the Blair Witch Project, and I really like Book of Shadows. But
I do too. I love Book of Shadows. I think it's underrated.
It is totally underrated.
Yeah. But it's just the shaky cam thing doesn't do my head or stomach any favors, I'm afraid. But I did really like Blair Witch Project, and I'm just intrigued about a 17 years later sequel. Well, it sounds more like a remake, as Joseph was saying, but I would be interested in seeing it. Yeah,
I mean, I saw it at the cinema, and I thought it was kind of amazed me was the power of hype, because, you know, a few episodes ago we were talking about the you know, when it was called The Woods, and it was coming up all the kind of the, but they've really advertised the hell out of it here, because there's all the buses, it's got like Blair Witch terror, you know, terrifying, the most horrifying scary movie you'll ever see. And it got like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right up until it opened, and it dropped down to about 37%, and then a bond. So either they were paying those people, or there was just like a real case of Emperor's New Clothes. But I didn't hate the movie. I just thought it was disappointing, considering it came from Adam Wingard, who did Your Next and The Guest. And I wasn't as massive fan as The Guest as I know some people are, but I thought Your Next was really, really good, and it was a fantastic updating of that home invasion sort of slasher thing of the
1980s. I really love both of those. I think this was a step back, and it definitely was not as scary as advertised.
No, I just didn't understand. I thought if they might as well just remade it rather than just doing a quasi remake.
They pretty much did.
Well, they did, didn't they?
Do you see any supernatural stuff in this?
You do get to see glimpses of the witch this time around,
and I think it's quite well done. You only get very little glimpses, but it's kind of this kind of naked thing, kind of like horrific.
I like naked things.
Horrific naked thing, but it's great. Do you like naked eyes? The work.
I only know one of their songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you missed what I said anyway, didn't you? So it doesn't matter. But
no, what did you say?
I said it's good that Toy has finally got some work.
I hate you. I wish I'd never asked you to repeat that. It was a horrible thing to say.
But no, but it's kind of, you see her in the background and just kind of flashes, and they do it quite well. She looks like it's weird, like Mr. Tickle, you know, like the Mr. Men with like really long arms, this kind of pink thing, like a spider behind them, and it works really well. But they also lift something from Borderlands, the film, that British found footage movie.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, they kind of lift a section of that towards the end. Well, kind of. It's a bit arguable, but it's well done. There's some great bits in it. I thought there's some really flashes of really good stuff. But it was just over familiarity breeds contempt, really. And that was the, I mean, they even end on the same shot, you know, it literally ends exactly the same way as the first one. And it's just thinking, I would have been tempted to take it and run with it in a different direction, you know, or do something different with it. But clearly the audience wasn't ready for it or wasn't interested in it. And I think it's with these kind of films, it's a bit like Scream 4, which kind of underperformed at the box office. They either came too early or came too late. And I think they did with Blair Witch as well. I think it's they just misjudged it. And I think it's just so many found footage films have come out over, well, they're still coming out all the time. But it's just kind of, yeah, there was just wasn't the audience there for it. So it's kind of bombed.
Has it not done well, no?
No, it was
not really.
Not really. I mean, it was only cost $10 million to make, so it's made its money back already. But they were expecting it to make like twice as much. It kind of, I think it kind of beat out Bridget Jones's Diary or whatever it was. But it kind of still opened number two behind that Sully film with Tom Hanks. So it just didn't do. Yeah, it didn't do as well as they were expecting it to. So, but it's an interesting failure. But I enjoyed it for what it was. But I was hoping it'd be a bit more. So I was a bit underwhelmed. But people I went with enjoyed it. They said it was quite creepy and freaky. So, but yeah. So anyway, Joseph, anything else? You said you've seen a couple of other things.
Yes, I guess I took one for the team, kind of. I ended up watching 31, which was the Rob Zombie crowdfunded, I guess you could call it, a slasher film. Yeah.
You said a dirty word. You said the RZ word.
Yeah, it is a dirty word. I'm not going to sit here and bash him as a person because I'm sure he's lovely. I'm sure he's a lovely human being and all, but his movies just do nothing for me. I mean, it's the same thing over and over. It's just you don't really know anyone, about their characters. I don't even remember any of their names. I don't even remember hearing their names. It's just a bunch of white trash just constantly screaming and cursing at each other. And, if this kind of type of story, which I'm not even going to go into because, it's just really not worth it. I think the problem is that he thinks this material is scary, but it's really just laughable. If you were playing it for laughs, you know, you might say, oh, that's kind of interesting. I can see what he's going for, but he takes it so seriously. Like, there's only so much you can hear of a redneck in clown makeup just screaming, quote unquote, I want to fuck every hole on your body. Before you just kind of throw in the towel. And, at the hour mark, I just had enough. I didn't even finish the movie. It was just abysmal. I don't get the love, you know, for his films. I mean, I'm sure there's obviously a market out there for it, but, just constant, you know, juvenile dialogue of people just cursing so much that just becomes so unbelievable. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, well, I've got absolutely zero interest in watching 31 because I'm not a 12-year-old boy. But
I was kind of forced into it.
I have no interest in watching anything Rob Zombie has. Because I've seen House of Thousand Corpses, the two Halloween films, Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects wasn't terrible. I mean, it was okay.
I thought it was awful.
No, I thought it was okay.
I know there are people out there who think it's a great piece of work. Even people who hate Rob Zombie seem to sometimes like Devil's Rejects. But I hate it.
No, it's not great. It's obviously – it's not really good, but it's probably it's probably his most watchable movie, I'd say. But 31 is definitely not. It's a definite – please skip this movie.
Is that out in cinemas, is it?
It's on demand.
All right, because I think it's released in cinemas over here at the moment.
Yeah, it was like I think it got like a small release, and then they put it on demand. So,
I take it.
Well, there's no demand from me for it.
Absolutely, but Nathan, you've got no interest, have you?
It'll be another one of those. If it's on Netflix, I might give it a shot. But until then, no, I don't really have any interest in paying to see it.
Fair enough. Okay. Joseph, anything else? Or actually, isn't it timely maybe that you did send through, this is the thing that's been doing the rounds on Facebook, although I think it's from 2011, it's when John Carpenter was asked about the remake of Halloween. And this was in some New York Film Festival, wasn't it? But apparently it's from 2011, but it's only really just doing the rounds here, and there's a little bit of dialogue about what John Carpenter thinks of Rob Zombie.
He lied about me. He said I was very cold to him when he told me and that he was going to make it. Nothing could be further from the truth. I was incredibly supportive. Why that piece of shit lied, I don't know. He had no reason to.
So, there you go.
Bravo, John Carpenter. Bravo.
Yes, yes, yes.
Very strange. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm sure Rob Zombie's a lovely guy. He's vegan and you know, I'm sure he's an interesting bloke, but I can't stand his movies, and that's just how it is. But obviously, John Carpenter, there's no love lost there either. So.
I think my problem with a lot of Rob Zombie movies is I never like any of the characters in his movies. I just don't like them. Like in House of a Thousand Corpses, I kind of was wondering as I was watching it. I didn't hate it, by the way. But as I was watching it, I'm like, am I supposed to like these victims, or am I supposed to like the family? Because, you know, the victims themselves, they weren't that sympathetic to me either. So I don't know. Like I was like, I mean, Joseph in 31, are the victims or the people doing it, is either group sympathetic? I mean, even if you still hate the movie, is either group sympathetic at all?
No, no one's sympathetic because the writing is just so bad. It's just like, it's just a, what was that? It's just a long excuse for people just to curse and yell. And it's just so unbelievable and just so juvenile. And he's just a terrible writer. I'm sorry, he is.
Well, there. Anyway, that's the Rob Zombie appreciation hour, or half hour, 5 minutes over for another week. But is there anything else?
Well, we've lost any Rob Zombie fans.
All four of them. Joseph, anything? Because the last thing I said about Rob Zombie, I thought even he was bored of his own stuff, because didn't he say he was going to stop making films because it was just making the same thing over and over again? I think probably even he's thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, this is really boring to me now. And just, you know, I'd love to see him make a, you know, sort of like a Bonnet drama or something that was just, you know, actually goes completely against type, and just see if he could actually make it. But
apparently his next movie he wants to make is like a hockey drama or something.
Okay. Well, I'd like to, it'd be interesting to try it, because it must be a little bit boring for him by now, mustn't it? He probably feels typecast by, you know, people wanting to make the same movie over and over again. And I think that would be, you know, anybody would get bored with that. So we're right behind you, Rob, if you want to stop making movies or make different ones. So, Joseph, anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. Nathan, how about you?
Let's see. Well, I watched Legacy of Blood, which is a slasher movie from the 80s from the early 80s with John Carradine, where his greedy family shows up after he's died to hear the reading of his will.
Is that also known as Blood Legacy?
I'm thinking it is. I don't know. There's an Andy Milligan movie as well, so I'm like... I'm very
confused. Which one did you watch?
Between the two. I watched the one with John Carradine.
That's early, like the that's piranha early scene. That's early,
yeah, early 70s.
70s.
Okay, yeah. Early 70s then.
Is that House of Seven Corpses as well? Is that one?
No.
No, it's not that one.
Is it also called Xanadu?
Oh, that's it. Olivia Newton-John, like, she comes in on roller skates at one point.
Awesome.
No, that would have made the movie awesome, actually, but... you know, like they're there for the reading of the will, like his like weird family, and you know, somebody starts picking them off one by one, and I was hoping it was going to be way better than it was. Unfortunately, like this movie has long stretches where nothing happens, and I just kept thinking, oh man, like is somebody going to die? Is something going to happen at any point? Because it's taking forever. So I mean. I liked when the death scenes kicked in. I thought they were fun and entertaining. So, I mean, I'd probably give this one a 5 out of 10, because to me, it's like, you know, like the death scenes I thought were fun, but the whole long stretches of dialogue was just kind of boring.
Well, it definitely wasn't Xanadu then, because Xanadu's never boring.
Never.
Well. It's not a great movie, Xanadu, is it? It picks up towards
the end. It's a
brilliant
movie.
Well, it's not really, is it? Let's face it.
It is. It is, really.
It's not. It kind of picks up towards the end. But it's
you know who else likes Xanadu? Meep likes Xanadu as well, and he knows his shit.
He knows his shit?
He knows his shit.
Okay. Well, we'll take your word for it anyway. I haven't seen Xanadu for ages, but I just remember it not being a great movie. But anyway.
Just because there's no goths in it. There's no gloomy music, just this joyful music, and you don't like it.
Oh, Eric, you know me so little. Nathan, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I also watched a brilliant, brilliant film, much better than Legacy of Blood, and it was called The Newly Deads.
Okay.
And it's about honeymooning couples. Well, actually, it opens with this woman coming into this man's office to rent a room.
He's lying, by the way.
Well, I'm getting to that part. This woman comes in to this man's office, and they end up, you know, kind of, you know, making out and stuff. And then he finds out that the woman's actually a man in drag. And, you know, like, personally, I didn't think they tried to, like, make it look like, you know, it was really a woman. So to me, it's like, I would, you know, I think he would know, you know, right off the bat, but he didn't, because, you know, he's kind of stupid. And so he kills the transvestite in a fit of rage. So years later, all these honeymooning couples, or not just honeymooning, but just couples in general, are showing up to stay at this lodge. And the transvestite's ghost comes back to start killing them off one by one. So, and I mean, it's got thrills, chills. I'm like, this movie, to me, I thought was fantastic.
When was The Newly Deads made?
It was the late 80s. Like,
it was 87, or I think, or 88. I believe it was 88. Yeah. I could be wrong, though.
Somewhere in that vicinity. But yeah, it's definitely late 80s, because it's, the fashions in it, I think Eric would love. Ooh. Especially like the bleached blonde perm of the woman who's staying there that's a psychic. So she's trying to help, as she knows, you know, that there's danger afoot.
I love a good perm.
Is it good as in Nathan good, or as in really good?
It's normal person good.
No, it's Nathan good.
It's Nathan good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like it could be quite fun. I have heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's fun. It's a really fun movie, because it's
Nathan for you.
This is Nathan for you.
Except was okay. Well, thank you for the recommendation. Is there anything else, Nathan? Before, I don't want to cut you off.
Don't cut me off now. The only other thing that I watched recently was Dawn of the Mummy, but I've seen it many times before because it's fantastic. I mean, Fashion Models, Awakening, and Ancient Mummy. Does it get any better than that?
Not really. No, that's one of the trash classics, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know what I've been wanting to watch? Nasty,
along with Boogeyman.
Mm.
One that I plan on watching recently, because I actually got it from Arrow Video, is Nightmare City, a.k.a. City of the Walking Dead.
Love it.
I was about to say, do you guys like that one? Because my memory serves, it's been a long time. It's like just a really fun, like cheesy movie.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's so cheesy. Yeah.
That's an apt description.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm like, that's what I remember it being, so I'm like, I want to rewatch it.
Yes, yeah, so you get they're not models, but they're dancers who get attacked by a crowd of zombies on a live TV show. That's awesome.
Excellent.
I remember the zombies looked really funny.
Well, technically, they're it's like 28 days later, they're, quote, the infected rather than zombies. But yeah,
okay.
They're zombies. So.
God, Nightmare City was so ahead of its time then.
So ahead of its time.
Absolutely. I said, thank you, Nathan. Is anything else?
No, that's all.
Okay. Well, I'll just rattle through a few things. We talked about Blair Witch. There's a couple of newer movies that I've seen. I saw Hashtag Horror from 2015.
Oh, Jesus, I don't like the title.
Well, no, but actually, I thought it was a really interesting movie. It's kind of almost like an art house movie, bizarrely, but with really annoying Facebook kind of social media themes running throughout it. Loads of really trashy graphics. But a lot of the rest of the film is kind of almost like a European art house movie, but then crossed with a teen slasher movie as well. And what makes it particularly interesting is it's the cast are all 12-year-old girls. not all of them, but the main cast that being murdered are 12-year-old girls, which it kind of makes it actually properly like not even a teen slasher movie, like a pre-teen slasher movie. There's kind of like it's a birthday party for one of the girls, and they're at this kind of ridiculously opulent mansion out in the middle of the snowy woods. The mother is played by, I can never pronounce her last name, it's Chloe Savini. Is it Savini or Savigny?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Sevigny or something like that. Yeah. She's the one that took on that dude's hog in that Brown Bunny movie.
Yes. But she's kind of like an art house, you know, she's kind of indie movie. And it's directed by a woman called Tara Subkoff. But it's kind of, I thought it was kind of really interesting because it's not, you've got a masked slasher killing off these preteen girls in quite bloody ways, you know, slit throats and all this kind of stuff going on. But then they're all absolutely obsessed with their phones and social media and stuff. It's kind of, it's a lot of people would really hate it, but I thought it was quite interesting. And certainly it's very different from like Friend Request and The Den and all the other kind of social media horror movies. It's, if you're prepared for something a little bit different, then I would give you a cautious recommend on that one.
I think it's on Netflix here. I almost watched it. Maybe I should. It sounds almost interesting.
Yeah, it is on Netflix. That's where I watched it. So it just came up on Netflix as a recommend. So we just watched it because we thought it was going to be... I mean, it's got some... Either got like 1-star reviews on IMDb or 10-star reviews. It's kind of a real love it or hate it kind of movie. So that was that. The other film, I got sent a screener, a couple of screeners, and I only got round to watching one. I will get round to the other, but it's Blessed Are Children by... director Chris Moore, who is a Facebook friend of mine, and I think probably several of you as well. He's made a number of movies in the past, and this is kind of a like low, no-budget movie. It's like about $1,000, the budget. But it's really, really well done. It's a feature-length movie, and it's kind of it looks really good for that little money. The acting in it is very good, and it's got quite an intriguing premise, which is... I'm surprised no one else has used it before, but it's basically people who are anti-abortionists are wearing baby masks and killing people who have abortions. And so that's kind of the crux of it. It has an ending, which kind of, without spoiling it, kind of reminded me of that, I can't remember the name of the film now, so it's no point saying it reminds me of a film, I can't remember, The Interview or whatever it was, the one that's set in the Hollywood Hills where people were getting bumped off at the dinner party. What was that called?
The Invitation.
It was The Invitation, yeah. It's got its limitations. It's kind of quite long. It's about an hour and 45 minutes or an hour and 50 minutes, and the characters are, for a no-budget movie, the acting in it is great, but there's a lot of dialogue scenes which possibly get in the way of the kind of the slashing. There's lots of nods to films like The Brood and all sorts of different horror movies. If you're a genre fan, you'll definitely get a kick out of it. But I think it's really well done, so I think it's worth checking out when it comes out. I don't know quite. I know there was going to be a screening somewhere in Texas, maybe. I might have got that completely wrong, but it'll probably be out for people to watch at some point soon. But yeah, that's definitely one to look out for. So, you know,
I've heard of that. Mark Schoenbach of Sadist Art just did the poster for them. It was a really neat poster, and the premise sounds awesome. I want to see it.
Yeah, the poster looks really good. It looks like a kind of paperback, a 1980s horror movie paperback image of like a doll with a skull peeking through. Definitely worth checking that out when you get a chance. So that's kind of what I've been watching recently. But I think it's time. Is it time to look into the cracked mirror?
I think it is, to see those portraits of Justin in my bathroom.
In your bathroom. I know that's too much information, Eric. But here is the trailer. And actually, before we start, who's coming in on this? Is that Eric? You coming in?
I'm coming all over it.
Oh, all over the mirror.
This Michael Alishan pick.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, that's a mental image I'll leave you with as we listen to the trailer for 1980s The Boogeyman.
When you were a child, did they warn you about the boogeyman? The boogeyman. He hurt bad children and did terrible things to their mummies. But you can't kill the boogeyman. Now, the most terrifying nightmare of childhood returns. The Boogeyman. The Boogeyman. He's going to get you. And you. And you. You can't hide from him. By the time they believe in him, it'll be too late. The Boogeyman, he's going to get you.
Begins with a horrifying, oh, the fucking echo.
Do we have an echo? Echo, echo.
We do. It begins with a horrifying killing and then starts to get bloody. The Boogeyman is the chilling story of concentrated evil and its gruesome effect on a small American farming community. The evil is so great that even exorcism cannot stop the bloodbath. Pray before you next look in a mirror. Or at a picture of Justin Kurzweil. And that's from the sleeve of the original Vibco release of The Boogeyman from back in 1980, one that famously became a video nasty, of course, which is why it was a much sought-after title for me, probably for many of us over in this part of the world, because it had that forbidden fruit aspect to it. And I know that this we're not all going to share the same opinion here, but I think... this is a great movie. I love it. But what I've never understood is that it often gets great reviews from quite mainstream critics like Leonard Maltin, who I used to collect his movie guides. I'd buy the sort of updated version every couple of years or so. And he gave this film 3 stars out of 4, which is baffling, really, because the film is just utterly ludicrous trash to me. And that's a compliment coming from me, but I just never thought it would be something that would float the boat of Mr. Maltin. I mean, the setup of the movie is that a brutal murder is of a nasty man with a pair of tights on his head, possibly Justin again, is witnessed by a mirror, and the evil is therefore trapped within it. When the mirror is shattered 20 years later, the Mr. Stockings on Head is kind of unleashed to wreak a supernatural havoc on anyone who is caught in the reflections of any kind of shards of the mirror. It gets compared to Halloween quite a lot, and I've never got that vibe, I have to say. I don't see it as a Halloween knockoff. I barely see it as a slasher movie, to be honest. I mean, apart from the opening where the young boy kills a promiscuous adult, which sets up the rest of the movie, this film veers off on its own track, I think. I mean, it throws in lots of elements from other films, and it has a real everything but the kitchen sink vibe. You get parts of The Exorcist. Lacey becomes... we don't even know. She sort of appears like she becomes possessed when she's at the psychiatrist's office. And there's the Amityville Horror vibe as well, because the house that they're staying in looks identical to the Amityville house from certain angles. You get not one, but two ludicrous massacres of young people. Firstly, and most hilariously probably, is the siblings who are now living in the house of the original massacre. Their deaths are, to put it mildly, kind of ludicrous. One of the sisters is, quote, killed by having a supernatural bathroom cabinet door lightly tap her on the side of the head, which apparently kills her. And then Timmy, the obnoxious younger brother, modeled on Justin.
Oh, for goodness sake, Eric. Come on.
But he is. He's totally you. I can imagine you being that obnoxious.
I think he's a skinnier version of you as a 10-year-old.
How dare you? Boogeyman! Yeah, but his death is just as silly. He gets sort of lightly tapped on the neck by a falling window frame, and that apparently is enough to kill him. Not that he doesn't deserve to die, he does, but it's kind of a very funny way to go. Then there's the teens by the lake, and this is actually quite well set up because Lacey and her son go fishing, and unbeknownst to them, Lacey's son has a shard of the mirror stuck to the sole of his shoe, and it's sort of beaming its evil across the lake to these canoodling teens. One guy gets a screwdriver through the back, a sort of screwdriver supernaturally levitates and shoves itself through the back of his neck and out of his mouth. And that's quite well done. What's less well done, though, is the when his girlfriend goes looking for him, she gets kind of a gentle, once again, a gentle supernatural push from a car door. And in a sort of a hilariously contrived and carefully choreographed looking maneuver, she ends up getting skewered in a moment that I think is referred to by fans of the movie as the kiss of death scene. But again, this is the stuff that baffles me. People say that this film is kind of a mix of art house and slasher movie. I don't see the art house element in The Boogeyman at all. I just see trash, trashy horror. And that's what I want. I don't want an art house element to it. I'm glad I don't see it. But apparently other people do. So the film makes very little sense and doesn't really adhere to any of its own rules that it sets up. But it's I think it's a great, fun 80-minute ride. Certainly one of the silliest of the video nasties. I don't think it's overtly gory. You know, one person's overcome by the supernatural force and sticks a pair of scissors into her neck, and that's kind of graphic. And the dude that gets shish kebabbed with the screwdriver again, I can understand maybe they might be bones of contention for censors. But apart from that, it's not particularly nasty or anything. One of our listeners, Graham Wright, has something interesting to add about this, about its video nasty status on the Facebook page, but I'll leave that till we get to the feedback section. And just one other thing that I love about the film is the synth score by Tim Krog, I think his name is. This was his own, this and the sequel, which recycles everything from The Boogeyman, are his only two IMDb credits. But I think he does a fine job on this, a tinkling Halloween-esque at times synth score that can be quite moody, and I think it works really well. Now I know we don't all agree on this, but the first person I'm going to ask about their thoughts on The Boogeyman is the newcomer to the film, and that is Nathan, because Nathan, you hadn't seen this up until earlier this week.
Yeah, it had been one of those movies that, you know, I kept meaning to watch, but I just never did, so it was nice to finally, you know, sit down and watch it. You know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, a lot of fun. Like, it was really hokey. Like you said, the kiss of death scene, I actually laughed out loud when that happened, because as you said, the door, it barely hits her and suddenly she's just like propelled forward to be impaled. And what's also crazy to me is just how ridiculous it is when she goes to see her boyfriend and she's looking, you know, through the passenger side window, and he's sitting there, like, you can clearly see that he's been stabbed through the back and he has this, like, you know, screwdriver or whatever it is protruding from his mouth. And she, it's like she doesn't notice it whatsoever until she turns his head to look at her. And I'm like, there's no way you couldn't see that.
No.
I will admit that, like, after the opening scene, before the triple murder of the siblings, I did start to feel like it was kind of starting to drag a little bit. And I was thinking, okay, you know, something's got to happen, you know, soon. But once that triple murder happened, and then, like, you know, right after that, we've got the teenagers and the car scene and, you know, the really over the top, you know, fun finale that I really like with the mirror shard and Lacey's eye. You know, I thought that all of that was a lot of fun. I actually watched the sequel as well, and I can really see what everybody's saying about how the flashbacks take up most of the movie. But
which version of the sequel did you watch? Revenge of the Boogeyman, or did you watch Boogeyman 2 Redux?
No, I watched Revenge of the Boogeyman, which had a lot of flashbacks in it. But I guess for me, it wasn't as many as I thought there was going to be.
Like, yeah, well, if you saw Boogeyman 2 Redux, that's a different kettle of fish altogether, but I'll get onto that later.
Oh, okay. I'm interested to hear about that. But as far as the Boogeyman itself goes, I wish I had actually watched it sooner, because I'm like, it's, you know, it's definitely not a bad film to me. And I'd be very interested to hear about the Boogeyman too. I always remember these video boxes when I was a kid, and the Boogeyman box came in this big oversized VHS box, and you know, like, it just amazes me that I waited so long to finally give it a shot. But
and did you enjoy the art house aspects of the film?
I mean, I enjoyed everything about the film. The art house.
Yeah. Indeed. Okay, something.
That's my thing. Okay. Yeah. I'm finished.
So somebody who didn't enjoy the art house aspects of the film, I don't think, is Joseph.
Yeah, I don't think I enjoyed much, if anything at all, about this film, actually. I'd seen it a long time ago, and I kind of remember liking it, but it had been years since I'd seen it. But, you know, I watched it this week. It took me 3 days to get through it. I mean, it was just that boring. I mean, never mind that the title, The Boogeyman, is a misnomer. That's the least of this film's problems. I think its biggest problem is that it just goes on and on and on, and it's only 80 minutes long. Sorry, but I think this may very well be the most boring movie we've ever covered. It's technically well made and, you know, better in that aspect than some of the stuff that, say, Nathan has picked or something for which one of those pesky Alishans have pledged for. Ironically, didn't one of them pick this one as well?
Yes, Michael did.
But I don't know. I just can't forgive its, you know, rather languid pacing. I mean, you can only watch a mute and his bromidic sister waltz around a farm so much before your eyes start shifting to your cell phone or your thoughts kind of drift to whether or not you have a clean pair of socks for work. I don't know. To give the film some credit, you know, I did like a lot of the cinematography, especially with the mirrors kind of beaming, I guess, quote-unquote evil out into the world and so forth. And I thought the skewer French kiss scene, or the kiss of death, as it's called, you know, I thought that was pretty absurd and goofy, you know, for its for what it did. It's a very interesting double murder. I'll give it that. But I don't know. This is the type of movie to make something as, you know, nice as a blowjob boring. You know, even going so far as to have the one that's depicted in this film interrupted by like a falling board. I mean, boy, if that's not some sort of Freudian subtlety, I don't know what is. I don't know. Maybe I was in a bad mood when I watched it. I mean, the fact that it took me 3 days to get through it, just it's not a very good sign. So, you know, thumbs kind of way down for me, I'm afraid.
Well, if you're interested in Freudian imagery, you should check out the sequel, because somebody gets an electric toothbrush shoved in their mouth and somebody else has an exhaust pipe shoved into their mouth. So,
yeah, I don't know if I'll be making a trip to the sequel. I have seen it a long time ago, but, you know, if it's just more of the same and literally more of the same, then it'll be a while.
Wow, you're a bit Morrissey today. I would normally expect this kind of, like, I've given up on life attitude from Gothy Gotherson, but not you, Joseph.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gothy Gotherson, Justin.
Oh no.
Well, The Boogeyman is a film that I like. It's not a film that I love, to be honest. I think the whole art house thing, I think, was really because Uli Lemel was like a German art house filmmaker. He kind of worked with Fassbinder. Was it Fassbinder? I think it was Rainer Werner
Fassbinder. Yeah,
Fassbinder.
Yeah.
That's right. And he made a film which is really good. I don't know if anyone's seen it, The Tenderness of the Wolves, which was based on the real child killing murders in Austria. I think it was in the beginning, early last century, which is a very kind of serious, very well done kind of art house thriller. So I think the art house thing kind of comes from that. Also, it's kind of, I do like these kind of films where you have people like Lucio Fulci and people like that who make films in America who are kind of bring a kind of sensibility to it that is kind of odd. And you get this with the Boogeyman. It's kind of, he's taking on what is kind of typical Americana, this idea of, you know, like American farmland, which is kind of being invaded by this kind of weird Auslander style kind of supernatural shenanigans going on. So I like that. I mean, I think it's kind of, I get the impression, I don't know, I mean, I interviewed Uli Lemel, who's the first person I've interviewed for Hysteria Lives, and he comes across as quite eccentric, to say the least. And I think he was kind of, I don't know whether or not he was taking the piss out of American films with this film. He certainly, I think it feels like he was with the sequel, Boogeyman 2, because it's kind of, it's almost like it's just a cash grab. And this, there are, obviously, as we, you know, already said, elements very much like the opening is very much like Halloween, isn't it? The opening shot of the farmhouse is kind of identical to Halloween. And I think the reason the film was such a big success financially, as we'll kind of move on to, was pretty much because that there was a gap in the market left by Halloween that hadn't been immediately filled. And so I think The Boogeyman kind of filled that that gap. And also, I think people went to see The Boogeyman thinking it was potentially a kind of continuation or a different approach to that kind of Michael Myers type thing. I do like it. I enjoyed it. I enjoy its early 80s-ness about it. I enjoyed the kind of the weirdness. I think some bits kind of make me laugh, and whether or not it would have been scary back in the day, I can't remember. But I like Susanna Love's kind of her kind of... She doesn't even go for a potty mouth, does she? But when she does that possessed voice when she's in John Carradine's office.
I'm going to get you.
Yeah, I'm going to get you. Sounds like a Yorkshire Terrier, doesn't she, rather than than sort of like werewolf woman. But I like that. And also all the things you said about, like, you know, made me laugh about the light tap on the head from the bathroom cabinet kind of killing someone. I thought the killing of Timmy in the window was done a lot better in Superstition a couple of years later when they kind of cut that teenage boy in half, whereas this was just like a little, you know, they sped up some bit of film and it didn't look particularly graphic. I think the reason that possibly one of the reasons it got banned was the BBFC, the British censors, had a real bugbear about blood on breasts, didn't they? They saw it as a rape. They said it was a rape trigger. So that the killing with the woman with the scissors, she kind of her dress kind of rips open a bit as well, so you see a bit of nipple and there's blood all over her cleavage. So I think that was probably the reason why the film, one of the reasons why the film was targeted. But of course, as we know and we've spoken about before, it didn't really make much difference, really. It was all quite arbitrary when it came to the video nasties. But it's a kind of it's a hodgepodge of different things. I mean, it's got the, you know, the soundtrack I like, but again, I think it is a mixture of Halloween and Tubular Bells. I actually did some liner notes for the LP release last year or earlier this year. Overall, I do like the film. I mean, it's certainly better than the sequel, and it's certainly better than the third one, which was, you know, appalling. I mean, I remember getting it on a VCD or something. Not VCD, what are they called?
It would have been VCDs, spread over two discs.
That's right. So I bought that. That was back in early 90s, well, maybe mid-90s. And, I mean, that was, like, really low budget. And I think Uli Lomel's kind of... I was just looking on his IMDb page, and he's kind of made something like 17 serial killer movies in 2 years. He's a kind of... He's a strange chap. But The Boogeyman is I like it well enough, but it's certainly not a favourite. But I appreciate its place in the canon. I love the promotional stuff. I love the American One sheet, which has got Susanna Love kind of looking out the window, and it very much on purpose it kind of brings to mind Halloween. And I think it was definitely with a view of kind of capturing the audience, which it clearly did to some degree. So that's my tuppence for the moment.
Yeah, the 88 films brought out on Blu-ray earlier this year, or was it last year, and it's got the reversible sleeve. Again, it's got the UK art, which is a picture of the priest holding up the crucifix with blood pouring down his face. And then on the back is that American sheet you said with the Susanna Love looking out the window. And interestingly, Justin, I don't know if you can shed any light. It's The Boogeyman with two O's in the States and with one O over here in Europe. Mm. Any idea why?
Don't they call it the bogeyman or something in the UK? Anyway, that's what I read on the background info. Some of the background info, or I think someone on Facebook might have mentioned that a lot of people in Europe call him the bogeyman instead of the boogeyman, because the boogeyman to them sounds like it's like a dance type thing.
Yeah, boogeyman.
Well, I think it was kind of, do you remember in, what was that film called? The one with the mortuary, when they said, oh, come on, boogeyman, let's dance. Or, you know, let's boogie. So it was kind of, I think there was kind of, potentially, there was somebody said, how true it was, they changed it because they thought it might be a dance movie rather than a horror movie, like The Boogeyman might be a disco movie. But I don't know whether that's true or not. I think it probably is. The spelling was slightly different, or there may have been a copyright thing. It could have been all sorts of different things. But they changed the name to Bogey rather than Boogie in the UK. I'm trying to think what else there was. I mean,
I didn't realize you'd done liner notes for the soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah. I did. And also, there was a couple of others. Uli Lommel did some as well, which there was a quite interesting tidbit, which we'll get onto a little bit, that he said about some very surprising person he met when he was editing the film and who helped him edit it. Actually, that Kiss of Death sequence, which I'll come on to a little bit later. But it is what it is. I mean, it's kind of the whole amateur horror. It's almost like Uli Lommel sat down with Susanna Love and said, right, well, let's watch horror movies from the last couple of years and see what works, and then let's do a mega mix of those. So you've got like The Exorcist, you've got with the priest, you've got the amateur horror with the house. We've all spoken about this in the Halloween. But of course, the other thing, it very much seemed to inform the Final Destination movies. So the idea of a slasher movie without a slasher, kind of flesh and blood slasher movie villain. So I think it was quite influential in those regards. And I think the Boogeyman is the kind of like the grandfather of the Final Destination series.
You were mentioning Superstition. I think Superstition did this formula, much better. That's just my opinion. But I had a question. It kind of pertains to some of the background information I have on the film. Did any of you feel that John Carradine's role was kind of tacked on? I mean, the movie's not very long. It feels like they were trying to, beef it up to like an 80-minute runtime, and they were probably stuck at like 70 minutes. They threw in 10 minutes of John Carradine. It kind of feels out of place.
Well, weren't they just trying to shoehorn in a name? Marquee value.
Well, he shot all of his scenes in one day. So So it was really just a matter of getting in a name to sort of try and sell it. I mean, I imagine that back then, because this is like independently produced movie that was sold to the Jerry Gross organization when they released it in 1980. But if you were going to somewhere like Cannes, which most of these movies would have gone to sell, if you had a recognizable name in the cast, then it would be easier to sell the rights to abroad. So I think it's very much done for financial reasons. Although John Carradine, I mean, he doesn't add a massive amount, but he always adds a little bit of class to kind of whatever horror movie he's in. And he's been in some real low rent stinkers, certainly in worse films than this.
Depending on which version of the film you're watching, in the scenes he's in, the boom mic makes an awful lot of appearances.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Now, in the 88 films Blu-ray, they have it, they show it in 1.85 widescreen, and all those mic shots that I've seen in previous versions have been obliterated, which I'm a bit upset about, because I love an old mic shot. I like technical flaws in movies.
Yeah.
Well, shall we go on to a bit of background? Who would like to go first?
Nathan would.
Okay, Nathan, what have you got for us? We'll sit back.
In The Boogeyman Part 2, the director is played by the director of the actual movie.
Yes, Uli Lommel plays Mickey something, isn't it?
Yeah, his name is Mickey, and he's the director in Part 2 of the movie within a movie.
Yes.
And The Boogeyman came out in 1980.
Yeah.
It features dialogue. And that's my tuppence for today.
Well, okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Joseph, you've got some stuff for us, I believe.
Yes. Apparently it was budgeted at about $300K estimated. That's what I've read. Apparently in the United States, it grossed about $4.5 million, which was by October 15th of 1980, which was a pretty smashing success, if those numbers are to be believed. The film was given a limited release theatrically in the United States by the Jerry Gross Organization beginning in November of 1980, although if the gross is at $4.5 million by October 15th, I'm wondering how they got those numbers mixed up between that release date, because November obviously comes after October, but never mind. It was subsequently released on VHS by Wizard Video, and that's the big box that Nathan was talking about. I also remember seeing several variations of that here in the States. The film's been released on DVD twice in the United States. The first release was in 1999 by Anchor Bay Entertainment alongside Lommel's The Devonsville Terror, which I think is a better film. But that was from 1983. This version is currently out of print. It was subsequently re-released by Sony Pictures Home Entertainment in 2005 alongside LaMalle's Return of the Boogeyman from 1994. The Boogeyman was placed on the UK's DPP list in 1984, but was later re-released on the Vipco label in 1992 in a cut form. In 2000, I believe, it was released on cut. Let's see. Critical reception for The Boogeyman has been mixed to negative. The review aggregator website Rotten Tomatoes reports that 17% of six critics gave the film a positive review with an average rating of about 4.1 out of 10. Time Out gave the film a negative review, writing, "Though sometimes slow, what makes the film so beguiling is its conviction and lack of condescension in depicting a world where fact and fantasy collide." Gary Arnold from the Washington Post wrote in his review of the film, "The Boogeyman achieves a certain vicious distinction by putting the occasional spectacular kink in an otherwise motley fabric." Or motley fabric, I guess. Todd Martin of Horror News Net found some originality in the story details, yet condemned the film's heavy influences from Halloween and The Exorcist. And he also criticized plot holes such as the fact that a character manages to reassemble the haunted mirror in a very short period of time, given how shattered and broken it is. Overall, though, Martin concluded, "Check it out if you don't have anything better to do, but don't expect to be amazed by it." And as Eric has pointed out, film critic Leonard Maltin gave the film a positive 3 out of 4 stars. And what is that rustling? Who is that's doing that? Bell. Yeah. Leonard Maltin gave the film a positive 3 out of 4 stars, writing, "German art film actor-director LaMalle lends unconventional angle to his combination to this combination of The Exorcist and Halloween. Effects are quite colorful, if somewhat hokey." Yeah, let's see what else I have. Give me one second. I got to scroll through here.
God, you show off.
Well, I didn't like the movie, so I had to get something. Let's see, where am I going to pick up at? Okay. Boogeyman 2 was filmed in 1981, but unreleased until 1983, directed by Bruce Starr and an uncredited Uli LaMalle. It was written by Starr, LaMalle, and the original film star Susanna Love. Although the writing goes uncredited in the film, in Boogeyman 2, Lacey is approached by a group of Hollywood phonies to make a movie based on her experiences. Lacey travels to Hollywood, to the home of a film director played by Uli LaMalle himself, as Nathan has pointed out, where she brings along the last surviving haunted mirror shard from the end of the first movie as proof to her horrifying experiences. One by one, the phonies are killed by the mirror spirit who possesses the body of the director's manservant. Boogeyman 2 is padded with many... Eric, you're so mature. Boogeyman 2 is padded with many flashback sequences from the first film, we know that. Return of the Boogeyman, or Boogeyman 3, which is, I think, that might be the one Nathan had watched. Is that correct?
No, it's the one Justin watched.
No, I saw the movie one where they're making the movie of her story.
Okay, yeah, then that's the actual Boogeyman 2. But Return of the Boogeyman, or Boogeyman 3, was released in May 5th of 1994, I believe, and is largely, again, constructed around numerous flashbacks to the Boogeyman. Let's see. LaMalle, I think he really likes this film because he basically just remade it so many times, but he's expressed interest in a fourth film, tentatively titled Boogeyman 4D. This evolved into a reimagining of the original film titled Boogeyman Reincarnation. And 4 out of 5 doctors performed 2 songs, Not From Her World and Baby Go Bye Bye, in this film. And you might remember them from the House on Sorority Row playing songs, Waiting
well,
for
Roxanne. They don't hate 10 doctors, no?
No, it's...
They're 4 out of 5. It's the same... Yeah. I always get confused.
Yeah, it's 4 out of 5 doctors. In that film, they played songs Waiting for Roxanne, Mr. Cool Shoes, Modern Man, Waiting for Change, and Dawn Patrol. Star Susanna Love is the real-life sister of co-star Nicholas Love, who plays her brother in the film, and was at the time also the wife of director Uli LaMalle. She and LaMalle co-authored the screenplay for this film. The house used for the exterior shots of Lacey and Willie's childhood home is located in La Plata, Maryland, and in 2004 was severely damaged by a tornado. That's a shame. And last piece I have here is producer Albert Zugsmith, who I don't think had anything to do with this film because his last film was in 1975, suggested to Lamel that he should cast John Carradine in a secondary role in order to enhance the film's overall commercial appeal. Moreover, Carradine's scenes, like Justin said, were all shot in a single day. And that's all I have for background.
Excellent. Justin, do you have any more to add to that?
Yes, I've got a few. I did helped out with some of the images for the liner notes and the images for the One Static release of the soundtrack on vinyl. And so I also asked to sort of write a few paragraphs on the film. But there's a bit from Uli Lamel, and he said, I just won't read the whole thing, but say he says, making Boogeyman was like getting into a spaceship and leaving this planet with a group of friends headed by my ex-wife Susanna Love. He said that when they finished making the film, he edited it as well, and he got put the elements into a car and then drove to a motel. I think it was in Los Angeles somewhere. And he said there was a knock at the door one night, and he opened it up, and it was William Burroughs. Was at the door, and he wanted to know what the strange noises were coming from Uli Lamel's room. So Uli Lamel invited William Burroughs into the room, and they edited the famous skewer kiss of death scene together. So that was quite an interesting tidbit. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but that's what Uli Lamel said. Now, the film was... it was also, I believe, the auntie and uncle in the film. Susanna Love's real auntie and uncle. So it was a real family affair. Obviously, as Joseph mentioned, it was, Nicholas Love, wasn't it? Her brother. It was in it. Now, the film was, because we've spoken about this before, about with like Halloween and why there wasn't the floodgates as rip-offs or things didn't really open until like 1980, really. And so 1979, there was relatively few Halloween cash-ins. The film started gestation in July of 1979 when the script was completed. So it didn't start filming probably either, I'm not sure exact date for filming, it's probably late 79, early 1980, because it looks like it's it looked kind of like spring or autumn, doesn't it, really, in the film? Doesn't look like it's in the summer.
Yeah, it's a very fall type film. It feels like it was on the cusp of the 79 and 80 with the fashions.
Yeah.
Well, I can confirm that on the extras for the Blu-ray, Uli Lamel says it was filmed in October of 1979, 4 weeks.
Okay, well, there you go. So yes, there was that. The film, as I mentioned, was released, was picked up by Jerry Gross, who put out quite a few classics in 1980. Now, allegedly, this film outgrossed another of Jerry Gross's films, Zombie, or Zombie Flesh Eaters, as we know it over in the UK, which also released in 1980. It's apparently also outgrossed Miss Nude America Contest and I Spit on Your Grave, which are all put out by the company. So
classics.
So classic, exactly. So it's one of the biggest grossing horror movies of 1980. Including obviously with Friday the 13th. So Uli Lamel got on to, was struck lucky really with this movie. Now, the last thing I was going to mention was that Joseph mentioned about Boogeyman 4D, or what was now Boogeyman Reincarnation. Now, on the liner notes, Uli Lamel says 34 years later, in October 2014, we shot a reimagining, in quotation marks, of the original in Canada, entitled Boogeyman Reincarnation. And if you look on IMDb, it is on there, and it says it had a budget of $4.5 million. So for whatever reason, Boogeyman Reincarnation has been sat on the shelf for 2 years. And so whether or not it'll ever see the day, the light of day, is anybody's guess. But that's kind of my tuppence. Eric, have you got anything left for us?
Yes. Okay, I have a few things. Let me see. Yeah, Nicholas Love, who you said was Susanna Love's, or still is Susanna Love's brother, he also went on to appear in Fatal Games in 1984. After the success of The Boogeyman, Uli Lamel was approached by Paramount Pictures to do the sequel. But he describes it as one of the worst experiences of his life, trying to negotiate with them. And he ploughed this experience into the script for Boogeyman 2, which was based sort of loosely on the Hollywood wheeling dealing that he was trying to do. Now, I really like the sequel in its original form because, I mean, it does utilize a lot of footage from the original. I'd say maybe a third of Revenge of the Boogeyman is footage from the first film. But you know, there's lots of fun deaths in the second one. There's, as I said, somebody gets killed with an electric toothbrush, somebody else with shaving foam, somebody has their mouth shoved onto the exhaust pipe of a car in a very phallic suggestive scene. There's, you know, things like chainsaws come to life, that type of stuff, and it's kind of fun, and it's got a great ending as well. But in 2002, he brought out what he called Boogeyman 2 Redux, which was a re-edit of the sequel, and it's one of the most bizarre releases I've ever seen, mainly because now what he's done is he's put in 95% of the footage is from the original Boogeyman. He's taken small clips from the original Boogeyman 2 and sped them up for some reason. I don't know why. And he's interspersed it with video footage of himself being interviewed in the character of Mickey, who is the director in Boogeyman 2. And he's been accused. He's been accused of the murders. He's been interviewed off screen by a police person, he's been accused of the murders that took place in Boogeyman 2, and he's sort of explaining in flashback what happened, although all the footage is from Boogeyman 1 for some reason. It's just absolutely bizarre and one of the biggest wastes of money I have ever spent on a DVD, because when I watched it, all I got was, you know, oh, hang on, I already own the Boogeyman. What am I doing watching this again? I steer clear of that one. Boogeyman Reincarnation, as you said, Justin, there is a trailer available online, and it looks like it is a completely original film, finally, because I know that in the third one, doesn't he use a lot of footage from the first movie yet again?
Mm-hmm,
that one,
yes.
that one that you have on VCD, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that for years, though. I saw it when I first got it, but, you know, 20 years ago, maybe.
I had that on VHS at one point. It had like a blue, green, purplish looking monster on the cover. It was like a cheap VHS release around here.
Let's see. Also on the Boogeyman 2 Redux DVD, there's some extras which says clips from. He says in the extras he's going to make another 4 Boogeyman films, and it includes clips from Boogeyman 3 and Boogeyman 5. It skips 4 for some reason. Now, I don't know if Boogeyman 5 ever emerged, but it shows maybe 3 minutes of quote highlights from it, which includes things like a levitating car and somebody getting into a helicopter and being subjected to supernatural force, and two people in a motel watching TV and watching all this happening on the television. I don't know. It just looks bizarre. But he said he was working on 4 sequels simultaneously for Boogeyman, but they've never emerged. This was 2002. Timmy, the wonderful Timmy, who it seems to be channeling not just Justin, but also the horrible little bastard who is front and center of Nightmares and a Damaged Brain. He's played by an actor called David Swim, and this is not surprisingly his only screen credit. But apparently, according to IMDb, he went on to serve in the U.S. Navy from 1986 to 1992, which included 2 4-month tours on a minesweeper platform in Operation Desert Storm. So he went on to be a hero. And also, Justin, you were saying that the aunt in the film was Susanna Love's real aunt, but according to the liner notes for the Blu-ray, that was actually her mother played Aunt Helen in the film. And one of her cousins, a girl called Lucinda Zeising, was one of the young girls that got killed. Now, she plays a character in it called Susan. Now, I don't know which one Susan is. I think she might be one of the kids by the lake. She might be the Kiss of Death girl, actually. But she could possibly be Bathroom Cabinet Girl either, as I call her. But I think that's all the information I have on Boogeyman.
Okay. Well, thank you. I mean, it's quite a lot of background, isn't it? I mean, the other thing that we haven't mentioned, but only just in passing, was, of course, just to confuse matters even more, was the Boogeyman Sam Raimi films, weren't they? Or were they produced by Sam Raimi?
Yes. Yeah, they're produced by Sam Raimi. And Lamel actually sold them the rights to the title, so because he had copyright on the title, apparently. I didn't think you could, because I thought it would be quite a generic term. But yeah, so he got the rights back in the maybe 3 or 4 years ago, which is what prompted him to do this reincarnation sequel that apparently is coming out this year at some stage, from what I can read anyway. But again, he promised 4 sequels, you know, 15 years ago, so
It's very, yeah, he's a fascinating man, but he's kind of quite, and obviously he got divorced, didn't he, from Susanna Love. I haven't seen the 88 films release. There's an interview, isn't there, with Susanna Love on that?
It's just a text interview that Callum Waddle did in a booklet. There's a video interview with Uli Lamell. It's only about 12 minutes long, and that's really the only other extras there is, apart from a trailer.
The
print looks really good, though.
Okay, because I've still got the one with the double bill, the Devonsville Horror. Yeah. I've also got the big box VHS release that you're talking about, Joseph, knocking about somewhere, that I bought many years ago.
The Devonsville Terror.
No, of the Boogeyman, you know, the big box NTSC release.
No, I was just saying you said the Devonsville Horror. It's the Devonsville Terror.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. Okay.
Is it that film? I've never seen – the only Uli Lamell films I've seen are the two – Boogeyman movies. So what's Devonsville Terror like? Is it any good?
It's I actually think it's better from what I recall. It's more supernatural shenanigans, but I'd definitely give it a watch.
Is that the one with Tony Curtis in it?
I don't remember Tony Curtis in that film. He may have been, I'm not sure. I remember liking it, but yeah.
You're not thinking of The Manitou, are you?
No, and I'm not thinking of Someone Like It Hot either, if that's what you're thinking. I'm not stupid, you know.
Well, let's just move on from that, shall we? So, is there anything left to say on The Boogeyman before we get into some feedback? Or actually, what we could do before we get on to proper feedback, how about, not proper feedback, but feedback not about this film. Joseph, do you want to regale us with some of the comments from the Facebook group about this movie and see what our listeners think of The Boogeyman?
Sure. Let me just scroll through here and find them. Okay, let's see. Amanda Reyes says, I just rewatched The Boogeyman recently and loved it. It's a slow burn and so creepy. There's definitely something deep going on there with the idea of childhood traumas left to haunt a house and even the mirror that witnesses the anguish. And I love the idea of that, but really The Boogeyman just works as a strong supernatural slasher with a few WTF moments. Like the whole segment of the teens getting killed at the beach house, which I love, but admit it's total filler. And I would agree. I would want more of that in the film. But anyway, and she says, a lot of atmosphere. The soundtrack is amazing. I picked it up after seeing the film again. I agree with others who have said Lamell never topped this. And while I don't like most of his output, this is a solid effort and a fairly underrated little horror film. Looking forward to your thoughts. That was Amanda Reyes. Justin Kosh says, Uli Lamell's only good movie. Apparently he is aware of this because he keeps remaking it every few years. I wish I still had my Anchor Bay DVD that was paired with the Devonsville Terror. It died in the fire of 2000. Whatever that means. John Jordan... John Jordan says, I hated this the first time I watched it years ago, but I gave it a rewatch recently, courtesy of the 88 Films Blu-ray, and found myself really enjoying it. Has a couple of good kills, cool soundtrack, and an exciting finale. It's also a masterpiece compared to the rest of the garbage made by Uli Lamell, besides Devonsville Terror, which isn't bad. John Matthews says, hold on just a second, let me get some of this off the screen here.
Okay, and while you're doing that, I will say that Tony Curtis is in Brainwaves, which is another Uli Lamell film. Donald Pleasence is in Devonsville Terror.
Oh, okay. John Matthews says, I recall really liking this one back in the day, seeing the uncut version on Australian VHS label's Cinehome video, I guess that's what he's saying, along with a dreadful sequel. However, upon a recent Blu-ray revisit from 88 Films, it still held up. It's a highly original concept, a supernatural slasher which was ahead of its time. It's gory and has some great kills. It's a tense film that builds up with an iconic satanic-themed ending. It's more of an art house film overall than typical early 80s trash. The director himself was quite the talent, as you see his... He's worked with the great German New Wave director Fassbinder, which influenced his style. The director sadly hasn't done anything as good and now makes awful direct-to-video crap. Let's see. Asia Ramey says, I saw this movie when I was a kid. I rented it at my local mom-and-pop video store and couldn't wait to get home to watch it. Boy, did it scare the crap out of me. I even took down every mirror in my bedroom and slept with the lights on. That dude was frightening with the pantyhose over his head. I still enjoy watching it. Brings back good times. Great show, guys. Looking forward to more reviews. Graham Wright says, I chatted to a BBFC representative at a festival years ago, and he had a hazy recollection that the film was picked on during the Nasties hysteria, not because of the gore, but that the scene with the bloke with the stocking on his head entering the lad's room had possible sexual abuse connotations. Recently watched the 88 Films disc and couldn't really see it myself. Okay. Jake the Snake McCoy says, yes, I love this movie. Yeah, it's cheesy and obviously rips off a lot of the classics, but I think it has good atmosphere, a great score, great kills, and a neat premise. My biggest guilty pleasure ever. Screw the clip show sequels, though. And there's quite a few here. I'm just trying to clear up some room on my screen. Okay. Mike Alishan, who I believe picked this, says, one of the greatest slasher movies of its era. Susanna Love is generating all sorts of Jamie Lee in this, simultaneously portraying a strong and vulnerable character just like Laurie did 1 year prior. I can't believe this gorgeous, talented actress didn't go on to have a more prolific career. The soundtrack is dark and mesmerizing on the same level as Halloween. The death scenes in this film are unrivaled due to the three main factors: the tension buildup, the outstanding camera work, and the gorgeous cinematography. The ending left an opening for a sequel brilliantly. A shame no true sequel was ever made. Sigh. Maybe it was for the better. Okay, gents, I have drooled at the mouth long enough about this film, so let me end this on a final note and say that it is in my top five slasher movies of all time. Interesting. Alex Bowley says, rewatched it a few years back and thought it was a decent low-budget entry for the time period. Alan LaDog, or we know who that is, Justin. He says, Gareth has his say, or Garth. I don't know how you pronounce his name. Another film that was hyped up before my viewing due to it being one of the video nasties. Of course, it's not that nasty at all and very stylish, even if it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Clearly, the director liked it due to his constant recycling of it in later years. I always wondered why Americans say boogeyman, though. Here in the UK, people always say bogeyman. Boogeyman makes me imagine some killer 1970s disco dancing murderer.
There we go.
Yeah, so I guess that is some sort of a UK thing, although Justin doesn't seem to recall anything like that.
Well, I mentioned it, didn't I?
Oh, I thought you'd set up like you'd never heard that, but never mind. Let's see, where am I? Mike Paul Sanders says, I love this one. There's this haunting, dreamlike atmosphere throughout much of the film, like in the director's follow-up witchcraft movie, The Devonsville Terror, that keeps you wondering if what you're seeing is real or not. And never before has a pair of cheap stockings looked so terrifying. Jay Bullington said, this should be interesting. And finally, Donnie Yabara says, it rocks.
Cool. Well, I can say that Susanna Love did go on to have a great career because she was in a film called Olivia, which came out in the UK under the wonderful title Prozzy, as in prostitute.
Wasn't that also directed by Uli Lamel, though?
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's only ever in Uli Lamel projects. So, well, she was in some Andy Warhol stuff before she did Boogeyman, which is where she met Uli Lamel. So.
Cool. Well, thank you, everyone who wrote in on the Facebook page. That's fantastic. And obviously, we will be announcing what we're going to be covering next on the podcast shortly. So we'll give you a chance to weigh in on that as well. But we've got some other feedback. Who would like to go first?
I got some.
Okay.
It says, hiya. I'm not sure if this is something you have discussed, but I love this made-for-TV slasher starring Mary Lou Henner and Michael Mancini from Melrose Place. And there's a link provided for Lady Killers from 1988. It's about a bunch of male strippers who are just trying to make it in a woman's world, getting slashed on stage by a fright wig and sunglasses-wearing killer. Michael must strip in a police lineup and go undercover. Keith David shows up and attempts to explain gender, then gives up. The whole thing is on YouTube and is of poor quality. There's a VHS. Take care, Christy. And no, I've never even heard of this movie, but it sounds hysterical.
What's it called again? I missed the...
It's called Lady Killers from 1988.
Oh, okay. No, I've not heard of it either. I'll have to check that out.
I can't say I've heard of it either.
But, yeah, that'll be something I definitely want to look for, because, I mean, if it's some made-for-TV slasher movie, I definitely want to see it.
Yeah, but nothing at all to do with the fact that it's got male strippers in it. It's
just... No, no, that's just one of those perks. I should ask Amanda, because, you know, I mean, she knows more she's about TV movies TV than anybody movies, else yeah. I know. Yeah, so I'll see if she knows it.
Okay, I'll go one next. Okay.
Yeah, no, please. I'm just trying to find, but I've got one here, but I'm having problems locating it.
Okay. This one comes from Andrew. He says, "Hi guys, recent convert to the Hysteria Continues, and have been thoroughly enjoying all the episodes so far. Discovered a lot of films I'm sure I would have overlooked. I know everyone involved is way too cool for school." Well, that's me, but not Justin. "And not nerdy in any way."
That's you. Where's that not horse? Me.
Sorry, he says, "I know everyone involved is way too cool for school and not nerdy in any way, so probably not into pen and paper role-playing games, but I wondered if you knew that there is a game based around our most beloved of genres. Slasher Flick is written by one Cynthia Celeste Miller, who really knows her stuff and wrote the game as a love letter to those cinematic gems. One person runs the game as the director and sets the scene, but where it deviates from other RPGs is that while each player has their main character, there's also a set of secondary characters that everyone collaborates to send to their senseless deaths. The killer is more or less invincible until there's only one or two characters left. Players are rewarded for doing idiotic things, like going outside alone to check what the noise was, with genre points, which can be used to re-roll poor dice rolls in an attempt to save a character's skin. There's also rules for freakouts, being a scream queen, a large list of character stereotypes, and more. I've played this game in the past, and it was great, a great combination of good fun and bad taste. There's a link to the Spectrum Games blurb on it here," and he gives me the link. It's spectrum-games.com. "The tagline on the back of the book reads, 'Unstoppable maniacs, gratuitous violence, nail-biting suspense, horny camp counselors.' Keep up the good work, and I look forward to many more episodes in future." And that comes from Andrew. Well, I've never actually played a pen and paper role-playing game in my life, but... if anything was going to get me into it, it would be this one slasher flick. It sounds kind of like it could be fun.
Yeah, it does sound like fun. Is it kind of? I wonder if it's the same as, like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and Call of Cthulhu, that type of role playing game.
That's what I'm imagining it is. Mm. Yeah,
I haven't played that since I was about 14.
All right. Have Nathan, Joseph? Have you ever played RPGs?
No.
No.
I may have been around people who played them, like when I was a child, but I never actually played any.
Well, something to look out for. So thank you, Eric. Joseph, have you got anything?
Just everything from the Facebook page.
Okay. Well, I've got one here from a long-time listener. And it says, "Hey, guys, long time no speak. Still listening religiously to your podcast, although work and renovating a house has taken its toll. Never mind, though. There's always time to sit down and watch one of our favourite movies as some guy goes crazy with his massive tool. Speaking of which, ooh, I have caught a few new movies of late, and lo and behold, they haven't all been slashers. I loved 10 Cloverfield Lane, Bone Tomahawk, and The Witch, all of which I've recently seen. A special shout-out as well to The Scout's Guide to the Apocalypse. My hopes weren't that high, but I was pleasantly surprised by this hybrid super-bad crossed with a zombie movie. Very funny and gory and well worth a watch for friends and a few beers." I've seen that. Have you guys seen... you seen that one?
No, I believe it's on Netflix, but I haven't watched it.
It's quite funny. It's definitely worth a watch. It's kind of quite high budgeted as well for something like that. You'd think it'd be kind of I think it kind of bombed a bit at the box office, but it was I thought it was quite entertaining as well. Goes on to say, "As I say, I've been crazily busy at work, although the last few days have been full of distractions. So we had a superstar director right outside our offices in Brum, i.e. Birmingham. Yes, Mr. Spielberg has been filming Ready Player One in Birmingham. And they've been filming right in front of my office window. Needless to say, I didn't meet the great man himself, but the experience of seeing a big budget film shot on your doorstep has been interesting, although things did get a little trying the 15th time you see the same shot go past. I suppose that's a movie business for you, and sometimes it's better not to see behind the scenes. It often takes away some of the magic. Anyway, I suppose I have to get on with my house renovation, as I have a lot of screwing to do. But I hope you guys and all your listeners are tickety-boo. P.S. Very much looking forward to Don't Breathe, which I'm seeing next week. Let us know what you guys think when you have a chance to see it. Much love and best wishes, Tosca Top Socks.
So, Tosca.
Yes, for a little while. But Don't Breathe. I haven't. We went to see Blair Witch instead of Don't Breathe. I probably wish I'd seen Don't Breathe now. But I can't remember. Have we spoken about it? Have any of you guys seen Don't Breathe?
I haven't seen it yet.
I watched it, but I thought I talked about it in the last episode, but maybe I didn't.
I think you may. I can't remember. I know we talked about.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
But, well, I will say that. In case I did talk about it, I won't ramble on a second time, but to say that I enjoyed it, so I think it's worth watching.
Cool. Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it at some point. I don't know if it'll still be at the cinema in the next couple of weeks, but I've heard it was it's done really well at the box office, isn't it, for another low-budget movie.
Massive, massive success over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So excellent. Okay. Well, I think that's all the feedback. What we'll do is
I've one more.
Go.
Don't make me go rhubarb lady on you. This is from David Helvering. He says, "Hey guys, I've finally finished recording all your top threes and quizzes. I hope you enjoy it and can put it to good use. What's this in relation to, Joseph?"
This guy has just compiled every one of our quizzes and top threes down to the minute detail of every single one.
But he's edited the audio, is it?
No, he's just made a list of them all.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for doing that.
That's a lot of time on your hands, but thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. He says, "I'd like to see you guys return to do your top threes. I'm sure others are like me and have been introduced to films I didn't know about because of your picks. It's fun hearing you talk about films you love, and it's a great way to introduce listeners to new films. I'd also like to ask Eric," that's me, "to provide the lyrics to his Joke of the Week song. I can never make out the words. It goes something like... It's something like, 'It's my joke of the week. It's so, so pretty tonight that it reeks.'" or something like that. "What are the real words?" Okay, well, David, the real words are, "It's my joke of the week. It's oh so brilliant and fantastique." Now, I know I should say fantastic, but I needed something to rhyme. And I don't put that much effort into anything I do, so sorry.
To me, it always sounded like you were saying, "It's oh so chic and fantastique."
Oh, that would make it sound sexy.
That's what it sounds like to me, anyway.
Okay, well, he says, "Thanks, guys, David Helvering," but he has a PS. He says, "PS, Joseph, could you send this email to Justin and the others, and could you give the backstory behind the running gag of you receiving a package with a note saying, 'Please send to Justin'? I've never quite understood why you find that joke so funny. Join the club, David. And particularly why Justin doesn't."
Well, I think we've retired that joke, but I don't remember where it come from, but I think a long time ago, I think when we first started the podcast, someone was going to send something and someone said, "Could you also please send this to Justin?" It may have been something like that. And it just kind of became one of those Allendale long running jokes.
So
we've retired it.
So Justin, David wants to know why you don't find it particularly funny.
I think it's probably the reason it got retired. I think it was just, we'd heard it. It was one of those jokes that probably worn out is welcome before it started, a bit like your joke of the week, Eric. But
ironically, I sent this email to Eric and not Justin.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the irony for you. So
it's ran its course like Rhubarb Lady, so we need to retire that as well.
No, Rhubarb Lady's fresh and
it's not fresh. Still. It's rotten. It's rotten.
It's still exciting.
Sorry,
you are all rude barbs.
There's a PPS actually on this is the very last thing. Sorry, Justin. David says, "PPS, Nathan, I'm with you. Alice didn't die. Parts two and on are just nightmares Alice is having."
Yay!
Don't enable.
I'm very excited. Enable me.
So the next Friday the 13th movie is going to have somebody waking up and Alice is in the shower.
Oh, that would be awesome! It would be a total Dynasty moment or Dallas moment.
Dallas, yeah.
Talking of, Friday the 13th, it's got October 2017, isn't it, as a release date for the next Friday the 13th, part 13, I think they're going with.
Is it part 13?
Well, I don't
know. I thought it'd be part 14, because Jason X, and then
Jason X,
Freddy vs. Jason, that's 11, then the remake was 12, so this would be 13.
Yeah, so there you go. Talking of... returning people, there was I'm friends with Shelley Bruce, who played Tiger in The Burning, and she was at the Tampa Horror Film Fest, And she was joined by Leah Ayres, the guy who played Todd, the woman who played Marnie, and also Cropsey himself. They did like a kind of thing. And also they must have done a My Bloody Valentine thing, because they had Tom Kovacs, who we've had on the show, and he was singing the ballad of Valentine Bluffs on stage, and had this fantastic kind of recreation of the sign that you see in My Bloody Valentine on there as well. So that looked like they're having a lot of fun. And they had a Valentine's Day dance where the cast of The Burning were dancing with the cast of My Bloody Valentine.
Ooh, rivals.
Exactly. So, but I don't think anyone turned up to kill anyone, but that looked like a lot of fun. So, you know, maybe one day we'll get to, remember, if we do have any millionaire listeners, if they want to fly us all over to one of these film festivals, genre kind of festivals, we'd love to take advantage of that, and Eric will give out special favours.
Well, I can't lie, I will.
Well, exactly, yes, so we all know that. But yes, I was trying to think if there's anything else. We've got a couple of commentaries coming up that we're going to be doing, which we're not sure if we can talk about yet, so we won't talk about them just yet, but we're going to be recording one next week for an upcoming Video Nasty. I can say that. And then we've got, we're going to be doing another one very shortly for a classic slash movie from the early 1980s that we've recorded an episode for in this podcast. So that's another clue. But also, Joseph, haven't we got something else that, talking of little hinty things?
Sure, I need to get that together. Do you want to play the contact details or whatever?
Okay, I'll do that. Here's how to get in contact with the show, so we'll keep you in suspense.
Listen to The Hysteria Continues on iTunes. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.
Hello.
And subscribe to us on YouTube. You can email us directly.
Everyone hung up on me.
Continues@gmail.com.
Keyword, hello.
The Hysteria Continues.
Hello. Hello, Joseph. Can you...
Yes. I couldn't hear anything. It just went silent now.
Yeah, I assumed that we just can't hear the soundboard clip.
It's decided to stop working. Anyway, soundboard. Anyway, that's how to get in contact with the show. But we've had. We could probably.
I'm a more professional podcast. We edit that out. But
well, I know, but we're not a professional podcast. There will probably be quite a lot of record scratches in this episode because it has been a bit of a clusterfuck. My microphone keeps on stop working. So now, so I'm leaning into it, and I'm kind of deadly afraid to move in case it cuts out again. We've had echoes, we've had all sorts of things, we've had a meltdown by Eric. I mean, it's just been
like, I haven't melted down at all.
Well, I've just been predictive then. But yes, so anyway, so hopefully we can cut all this together, but it sounds like our sound clips thing stopped working. Although it was working earlier, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
But anyway, Joseph, I can play this jingle. You won't be able to hear it, but do you want me to play the jingle?
Yes.
And then I'll tell you, if you can't hear it, let me know. Well, don't let me know. Just don't speak.
Well, I know exactly how long it is, so I'll just after you say go, I'll just start talking.
Okay, Matron, here we go. Here's the jingle.
Okay, this is a new game for our listeners. Basically, I have a movie I'm thinking of. Whether or not we've covered it, I will not reveal. Basically, I'm going to give three vague little hints. And after the show has been edited and thrown online, which may be a couple of months,
I'm going to post a status. Time.
Yeah, I'm going to post a status on Facebook, and basically, you guess what movie I'm thinking of. You get one guess. And one guess only. And the first person to get to guess correctly will get a point. So this game will span several episodes until someone gets to 5 points by correctly being the first person to guess what movie we're thinking of. If no one correctly guesses this, I'll throw in three more vague hints about this film on the next episode. But you get the gist of it. What else to say about it except... I think that's pretty much it. I will also, if you do guess correctly in the comments, I'm not going to say whether or not you've guessed correctly. I'm going to announce who the person that guessed correctly first is on the next episode. So here we go. The first clue is the killer in this film leaves behind a sticky mess of evidence to his or her crimes. The second clue is a keyword clue, and that keyword is iron. And the third and final clue is the killer's identity is revealed through family ties. not the TV show, just through familial bonding. So there you go. That's your three vague clues as to the movie I'm thinking of. So good luck. Oh, and I also should mention the first person to get to 5 points will have their choice to either pick a film for us to cover, or you may join us on a future episode.
So there you go.
Although that may involve getting up at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be very well be depending on what time zone you're on. So choose wisely.
Exactly. So, and thank you for joining us. And Joseph, do you want to tell our dear listeners what we're going to be covering next time on the podcast?
Well, I told you guys something at the beginning of the show, but because of the, a certain DDoS attack on a certain place I visit, I may not have access to this film yet. So I think instead I'm going to do a double bill of Child's Play and Child's Play 2.
Oh, me likey. Me likey long time.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So, yes, we'll join us for a little bit of... you can imagine sort of... I've got visions of Eric in a ginger wig chasing me around an apartment. I don't know why, but...
that's your fantasy.
It is my fantasy, and it could come true. Who knows? So, yeah, join us for a little bit of ginge next time. And what are we playing out with, Eric? Did you...
just some of the score from The Boogeyman by Tim Krog.
Okay.
Aw, I was kind of hoping to hear, I'm your boogeyman, you turn me on. Darn.
Actually, I was going to do that and a little mega mix with... with no, what do you think about...
The Banshees.
No, but Human League, Mirror Man.
Ooh,
yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good choice. One, wouldn't it? So, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so we'll play out with a bit of that and also some of the soundtrack. So
Phil and the Girls.
Exactly. So join us next time on The Hysteria Continues. Say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye. I don't know how we made it through this episode, but we did. So goodbye.
Bye, love.
I think we must have broken a mirror, mustn't we, at some point?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, somebody said they saw Eric's crack. I think they were talking about the mirror, hey. But... okay.
Hang on. Can anyone else hear the bunny man on there?
Oh. Oh.
That was a good joke, wasn't it?
Is that your joke of the
week? Oh, no!
What?
The echo.
Has it come back?
Oh, my Eric's God.
Joke.
Yeah. Oh, what if it hasn't recorded anything of what we said?
God, what a cluster, you know what.
Justin, type to us, please. What has the cat done now? Is it eating your cables again, or what? For the sweet love of Jesus.
I think it's just the movie. I think the boogeyman is trying to get through.
Oh, the movie did it?
Yeah.
Curse.
I blame the movie.
Curse. It's got a death curse.
Oh, for the love of Christmas.